Funding for Think comes from SMU Master and Doctor of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Megan Daum has no interest in being a mother. She's successful and happily married, and she likes kids just fine. She just never really felt the call to be a parent that so many of her peers experienced. But like a lot of deliberately childless people, she has actually given a lot of thought to whether or not to have kids and describes her arrival at no as a process that has played out gradually over the years. While she's perfectly happy with her decision, she has learned over time that it is one that many people still find misguided or sad or self-indulgent. Recently, Daum asked 16 other writers to join her in contributing to a book of essays about the choice to be childless, and both the similarities and the differences in their stories make for fascinating reading. Megan Daum is an author, opinion columnist for the Los Angeles Times, and editor of the new book, Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 Writers on the Decision Not to Have Kids. Megan, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Great to be here, Chris.
Your title is deliberately provocative, but it does reflect this negativity and even distrust sometimes of people who choose not to be parents. The strange part about that is that it seems that parents are more judgmental of non-parents than the other way around.
Yeah, the word selfish is kind of like this ball that keeps getting volleyed back and forth. Who's more selfish? People who choose not to have kids, parents who have kids. You could make the argument that any number of life choices are at their root selfish. One of the reasons I really wanted to do this book in this particular way is that I wanted to reframe the discussion. You know, as you say, so much of the dialogue around this has always been around this notion that people who don't want kids don't want them because we'd rather sleep in late or take expensive vacations or buy expensive shoes or whatever that is. And to me, that just avoids what is really a much more serious and thoughtful kind of thought process. And I wanted to get some writers to kind of show their journeys into this decision. And none of them have to do with shoes or sleeping late, as it turns out.
Do you think people who make the decision not to have children have ultimately thought about that decision more than people who decide they will have them?
I'm not sure I would go that far. People make all sorts of decisions in all sorts of different ways. But I think when you make a choice that is not sort of the default setting, there is a degree to which you think about it more. You know, obviously, there are always going to be more people who want children and have them than people who don't. But I think that for a lot of us, certainly there are some people who this was a no-brainer. They never wanted children. They were not interested. They did not feel enough pressure to change their minds or feel coerced in any way. But, you know, for a lot of people, myself included, it was kind of a process. And it was liberating in a lot of ways, but also wrenching in a lot of ways. And so I wanted to capture the nuances of that.
I guess you spent your early years thinking you might come around and suddenly experience that ache for a child that so many people come to. How did it become clear to you that you didn't have that same desire?
Well, you know, it's funny because when I was in my 20s, I really, you know, like you say, I was never interested, but I kept assuming that I would change my mind. As a journalist for years, I would pitch this to magazine editors. I would want to write about it. In my 30s, I remember talking to one editor in particular, and she said, well, I'm not going to let you write about this. I'm not going to assign this because you're going to change your mind. Believe me, trust me. And I think I was about 33 at the time. So I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, lo and behold, I got to, you know, 39, 40, 41, and it never really changed. And, you know, there was a moment where I was sort of open to it. I got married when I was 39. But ultimately, it just did not feel like the right path for me. It did not feel like the best way for me to contribute to society, to be the best kind of villager in the village that it takes to raise a child. That is a cliche, but I think it's really true.
It occurred to me reading this book that people who want children or who have actually become pregnant are pretty much never asked to explain themselves, and they're not encouraged to keep thinking about it in case they might want to change their minds. Why do so many people question those who think they don't want kids?
Well, it's not the thing that traditionally most people have done. Most people do go ahead and have kids. And I think that parenting is I don't think, I know it's obvious that parenting is a really, really difficult job, and it's a really important job. So I think sometimes what happens is you have parents who are engaged in this really overwhelming, all-consuming, challenging activity. And especially for people who got into that thinking that they had to have someone come along and say, hey, actually, you don't have to do this, and I didn't have to do it, and I'm not doing it, that can kind of bristle. So really what I want to do is look at the ways that parents and non-parents are not adversaries, as is often set up kind of in the media. A lot of the discussion is around this idea that you know, parents and non-parents hate each other, have completely different agendas. One is selfish, the other isn't, et cetera, et cetera. And really, I think we're partners in all of this. It's really about choosing the kind of life you want to have and the way that leads to a better community, to better societies and better communities.
And, you know, if you take the long view of human history, we're at the very dawn of the era where you even get a choice about whether you want to have children or not. In the past, you know, heterosexual couples had sex, they got pregnant, they became parents, whether or not they planned to in any, you know, real sense.
Yes. And obviously, still, there are a lot of class ramifications around this. You know, there are people for whom this does not end up being a choice for all kinds of reasons. So I do want to be mindful of that. I'm talking I'm talking about this as sort of a larger cultural discussion. And obviously, I have 16 people talking about this, and they're all coming from very different points of view. But yes, this is, you know, having to defend your choice not to have children is a bit of a privileged position to be in. But I think it does warrant a larger and more constructive conversation than we've had in the past.
One point that almost every essay in the book is keen to make is that the choice not to have children is not like equivalent to disliking children. Why does that assumption particularly rankle? Clearly, it's not true for most of the people who contributed to the book. And that seems to be the one that really bothers people the most.
The idea that people who choose not to have kids don't like them.
Right.
You know, it's funny because there are three men and 13 women in the book, and I had noticed that it's mostly the women that feel that they need to emphasize this point. I didn't get a sense from the male contributors that they were so worried about being perceived as hating kids. It was something that was coming from the women, and I think it reflects a kind of cultural assumption that we are the nurturers, that we are here to raise the next generation, and no matter what, no matter how many, you know, lean in type movements are in, you know, center stage, this is a notion that prevails. So, yeah, I think that around this issue, you have a lot of people who just haven't thought about it very much. Even people who think about lots of things and question lots of things about the world often have not asked themselves or others very many questions about the choice not to become a parent. And so when the result of that is that you get, you know, the sort of lowest common denominator assumption, which is that, oh, these people must hate kids.
People who choose not to have children are free to engage in a lifetime of asking, like, what if I had chosen a different path? I mean, at some point that becomes counterproductive, but, you know, I would imagine that people do it over time. The interesting thing there, though, is that once other people have kids, it's sort of a third rail question, even if it's still a reasonable one, because it would seem to carry with it implications that you're not happy that you have the children you have.
Right. Somebody said to me the other day, oh, you know, someone should do an anthology of people talking about how they had kids and regretted it. And I said, well, good luck with that. Yeah, you know, one of the things with this in the book and in talking about the book, I would like just a greater openness to ambiguity around the whole thing. I think there's a lot of intellectual dishonesty from both sides, you know, sides, as it were, of this debate, as it were, and it's not really a debate. I think that, you know, people who have chosen not to have kids may feel some pressure to tell the world let the world know that they never regretted that decision for one second, and that every day is a day of celebration that they don't have children. And of course, it doesn't work like that at all. That stance is just as intellectually dishonest as the parent who says, every moment with my child is a joy, and I never have one day of you know, wondering what it would have been like if I'd gone the other way. You know, these are extremes that are just not reflective of the way people actually think and feel. And unfortunately, and for some reason, it's gotten kind of set up in the culture that it's this extreme either-or kind of thing. And the fact is that you know, feelings are fluid and life is fluid, and it's much more complicated than that.
Regret is always an interesting element when we're making decisions, particularly if we're trying to make decisions to avoid having regret in the future. So some people maybe choose not to have children for that reason. Some people have children, I think, so that they won't have to look back and think, I should have had a child.
Yeah, you know, that's something I thought about a lot. You know, it was never anything I wanted in the present moment. But at the same time, I have had a lot of friends who will say things like, well, I don't want a child now, but I'm afraid I'm going to regret it later if I don't. And they've gone ahead and done it. And, you know, obviously, I have never had anyone say to me, at least not without several drinks in them, that they regretted having children. Or, you know, usually it's I love my children, but I'm not sure I would do this again. Usually that's how that conversation goes. But yeah, I mean, the idea of doing something you don't want to do because you're afraid you'll regret not doing it later, that's something I turned around a lot in my own mind. And at the end of the day, I just had to say, I personally am not going to make a decision based on fear of future regret. And that's just that was what I came away with. And obviously people approach that in any number of ways.
So for people who are part of a couple, this is the kind of decision that both people have to sort of sign off on one way or another. But it seems that it's probably true in most couples that people aren't at exactly the same level of comfort with choosing to have kids or not to have kids.
Yeah, it's something I hear about a lot. I mean, it's something that's been an issue in my own marriage. I mean, you know, my husband would you know, he was never particularly gung-ho about having kids. I think if he were, he would not have married somebody who was ambivalent as I was. And we also got married when I was 39. I don't think he would have married a 39-year-old if it was his number one priority. But yeah, and again, these things change. There can be couples for whom this is a big issue one day or one year, and then it kind of, you know, floats away into another part of their consciousness, and they've got another issue in front of them. And I certainly know couples who have split up over this. So it's an important thing to think about, and an important thing for people to be honest with each other about. And you know what? I will also say that I have noticed in my own just sort of anecdotal research that it's often the woman that is more ambivalent than the man. I know more couples where the woman would really rather opt out and the man is more enthusiastic. And of course, there are all sorts of practical reasons for that, as well as maybe existential ones.
We're speaking this hour with Megan Dom. She's an author and opinion columnist for the Los Angeles Times. She's also editor of the new book of essays, Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 Writers on the Decision Not to Have Kids. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask a question, share your story, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies, offering evening programs for a Master of Liberal Studies and the new Doctor of Liberal Studies degree. You can design your own master's or doctoral degree at SMU this fall. More at smu.edu/GLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with author Megan Daum. She's an opinion columnist for the Los Angeles Times and editor of a new book of essays called Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 Writers on the Decision Not to Have Kids. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or you can email think@kera.org. You can also find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. I wonder if you can talk about this, people who don't have children and how they're affected by the sort of, I'll call it a cult of martyrdom that the American way of raising children has become. Like, parents love to talk about how raising kids is the best thing in the world, but it's also a 20-year sentence to hard labor.
Yes, and you say that like it's a negative thing. it's a cult of martyrdom. It's a cult of busyness. Tim Kreider, who is one of the essayists in this collection, he periodically writes op-ed pieces for the New York Times. And one of the pieces that he wrote, I think it was a couple of years ago, one of the op-eds he wrote that got a lot of attention was one called The Busy Trap. And it was about how busyness has become a status symbol. People compete over how busy they are, and it's really just become this hamster wheel that has as much to do with vanity as anything else. And I think the parenting culture is kind of an extension of that. There's a sort of way of showing off how sort of important your life is or how necessary you are to somebody else. And that is something that obviously parents have more leverage than non-parents, on a very sort of surface level. So it's easy to say, you know, look how essential I am. Look how harried I am. Look how busy I am. And that is really, I think it's exacerbated by social media. I mean, Facebook has become this way of kind of showing a curated version of your nuclear family life. And you know, it's really very much a surface thing. And unfortunately, it's just kind of like bled over into the public consciousness and become conventional wisdom that parents and families are kind of a more necessary unit than people who are contributing and living in other ways.
Do you think that the decision not to have children has affected the kinds of friendships you have made in certainly like your 30s and on into your 40s?
Yeah, I mean, you hear this all the time, and I'm no exception. I'm in my mid-40s now, and most of my friends, you know, started having kids late. That's just the kind of, you know, world I have been in. I mean, I'm in a place right now where most of my friends have small children. And it does affect our friendship. You know, most of them say, well, my social life at this point revolves around my children. And that makes perfect sense when we are in a culture where parenting is so front and center and almost fetishized. It makes perfect sense that it would be very hard to kind of maintain friendships with all sorts of different people in any kind of consistent way. And that's not to say that I don't see my friends who have kids a lot. Most of my friends have kids. But I have noticed that I also have friends whose kids are grown. A lot of the people I see sort of most of the time are people who are maybe 10 years older than me because their kids are in college and you know, our lifestyles are a little more similar. So yeah. But, you know, the thing that people have to remember is all those people who are too busy to see their childless friends now, just wait, you know, 8 or 10 years, and that'll totally change. They'll be begging for us to come back to them.
They'll come back. Right. Like, where are all the cool places we haven't gone in 15
right.
years? Right. You know, it's one thing to have made this decision personally and feel comfortable with it. It's another thing to make it an aspect of your identity to the extent that you are willing to write an essay about it and put it in a book. Did you struggle at all with, you know, inviting writers to take part in this project?
The process of finding the writers, that's almost like a book in and of itself. It's a really delicate process because, first of all, it became this kind of parlor game. You know, who, what writers did I admire? Do they have children? Do they not? And then, you know, once you sort of ascertain whether or not they have kids, you have to ask yourself, well, is this, if they don't, is this by choice? So I composed a lot of very, very delicately worded emails, reaching out to people and asking if this was something that, that they were interested in writing about. And it was really mixed. A lot of people said yes, this is fascinating, and this is something I want to think about and write about. But a lot of people said, no, you know, I can't do this. I can't take it on, either because it was just so personally intense or because there were family members or loved ones that they thought that they would really hurt if they wrote honestly about this. And there were some people who just said, you know, actually, I have no angst about this, and I don't really think I would have anything to say. So it ran the gamut. But I couldn't be more pleased with the essays that I have. And they all tell very different stories. I think everybody has, his or her own personal journey into this decision. Nobody in this book has made the decision for the same set of reasons. And that was really illuminating to me.
I was fascinated. There are a few people who at one point were open to having children. It never happened for a variety of different reasons, or the time wasn't right or whatever. And they've definitely come to, you know, peace with where their lives are. The phrase "dodged a bullet" comes up more than once in this book.
Really? Laura Kipnis, I think, talks about how she dodged a bullet. You know, some of the writers are definitely provocateurs, and, mm-hmm. and the tone really varies. You have some people who are intentionally out to push buttons, and other people who are more kind of reserved and even mournful in their approach. I mean, one of the things I want to make clear in the book, this is about people who have chosen not to have children. This is not these are not stories of people who have not been able to have children for various reasons. There are people who've had miscarriages, and there are people who, you know, for whom this decision is somewhat circumstantial. But there's nobody in this book that really wanted to do this in any sort of way. I mean, I think at this point, you know, somebody who doesn't have a partner or for whatever reason has not been able to have a child, who really, really, really wants to be a parent, can find a way to do it. You can adopt. There are different routes you can take. Obviously, it's not so simple to adopt. There are all sorts of issues and expenses. But I think, you know, with some exception, arguably you could say that this is something that one can figure out if one really does want to do it. So all the people in this book have made an affirmative, have said an affirmative no, which is something that Jeannie Safer, one of the contributors, talks about in her essay. The notion of the affirmative no, that you say no to something by way of making a positive choice about your own life.
For the longest time, same-sex couples who might have wanted children had to really jump through hoops, and sometimes they had them from other relationships or whatever, but it was harder. These days,
right.
It's much easier, which is a good thing for same-sex couples who want kids. I wonder, though, if some gay and lesbian people who never did want kids are suddenly feeling pressured in the same way that they assumed maybe 20 years ago that would not affect them.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to gay couples, and I certainly know a lot of gay couples who have children, but I've also talked to other folks who say, you know, there's a kind of pressure to appear normal, to normalize yourself. It's almost part of, like, you know, the acceptance of gay marriage. What comes with that is a kind of mandate in some people's minds to sort of complete the picture and have children. And that's been great for a lot of people. But at the same time, you know, I think it was Fran Lebowitz. She always said, you know, what's so great about gays in the military and gay marriage? Like, those used to be the two the two major benefits of being gay. I have a contributor in the book, Paul Lisicki, who is a gay man in his mid-50s now, and he writes a beautiful, poignant essay about not only growing up assuming that he wouldn't have children as a gay man, but then coming of age in the middle of the AIDS crisis and assuming that he wouldn't live, that he would not live into middle age. And with that landscape having changed so radically, he talks about you know, not until his 50s really even confronting the notion of being a father, if that was something that he would want to do. And he writes with a great deal of care and even with an allowance of a lot of ambivalence. He says, you know, I can imagine the child that I would have had if my life had been completely different. And he says, you know, I can't say that I would want to have a child. I could say I want to have a child sort of in the same way I would say, well, I would move to Tokyo if I had the chance. But these are really hypotheticals. But he writes very, very beautifully about that. And there's another woman, M.G. Lord, in the collection who is a lesbian and writes about a situation with a now ex-partner where the partner wanted to adopt a child. And it really it took their relationship down, this very issue.
It is interesting that many of the conversations we have about same-sex marriage in this country, and then, you know, as a result of, you know, marriage in general, they all focus on the welfare of kids when there is no law saying that if you marry, you have to produce children.
But didn't the Pope say something like that? No, there is no law. But I think that there is an assumption, and there has been for a very long time, that you are not an adult. You do not qualify as a full-fledged, mature adult person until you become a parent. And that is just a sort of cultural thread that we have not really taken a close enough look at, I think. I mean, this idea of what it means to be a responsible person, I would suggest, and I would actually insist, that being a responsible, moral person means being in society in the best, most productive, useful, peaceful way that you can be. And there is nothing less responsible than having a child when you don't really want to be a parent. I can't think of anything worse for children. And I would assume that most thinking people would agree if they thought about it.
This, of course, is not universal in the book, but there are some people who look back at their own parents and you know, have sort of recognized that they did not enjoy the job, that they really felt burdened and overwhelmed. And that would have to sort of color your sense of what it means to take on this role and you know, really cause people to think, I need to be absolutely positive before I take this step.
Yeah, we have a number of people writing about dysfunctional families. Not everybody. A couple people, actually. Anna Holmes says her parents were so good that she doesn't think she can meet the bar. She says she would probably be such a committed parent that she's afraid, you know, she's afraid to even get into it for that reason. But yeah, Danielle Henderson is a young writer who writes about growing up with, you know, in a very poor family and a mother who was really not up to the job, and there was a lot of chaos and dysfunction, and she ended up being raised by her grandparents, and she talks about having made this choice really out of a need to save herself. Her essay is called Save Herself. And there are other iterations of that. But, you know, one thing I would point out is it's kind of tempting to say, well, these people have messed up childhoods and that's why they've made this decision. But, you know, the fact is that a lot of people have messed up childhoods to one degree or another, and most people actually do decide to have children. It is just as, if not more, common to say, "Hey, I want to do better than my parents. I want to correct this," than it is to say, "I'm going to step away from this altogether." So the idea that this choice not to be a parent comes from having bad parents yourself is a bit of a canard, because people make this decision, you know, ultimately, no matter what kind of families they have. They choose one way or the other.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can also email think@kera.org. We have an email here that says, I'm a 34-year-old female, and I've never kept it a secret that I don't want children. I had grown quite used to explaining my position and dealing with the constant, oh, you'll change your mind statements. Recently, I had a medically necessary hysterectomy. I thought being physically incapable of carrying a child would have quieted much of the defending I had to do regarding my choice. That is not the case. There's been a vast increase now in the the passion of others, reassuring me that I can still adopt or use a surrogate for when I change my mind, despite the fact that years before this procedure, I was vocal about my choice not to have children. And the writer says, I'm interested to know if you ran into something similar while gathering stories for this collection.
I didn't run into that story, but I think that is really interesting that actually not being able to do this thing would sort of up the ante on people's encouraging her to do so. I mean, because it's really true. It used to be before this technology, before fertility technology was available. It's true. It's like if you were, for whatever reason, biologically unable to have a child, including if you were a man, if you were a gay male couple, for instance, then okay, well, you're off the hook. But in fact, now there's still no excuse. You can use a surrogate. You can adopt. Obviously, people have always been able to adopt, but I think adoption is much more sort of part of the public discussion than it's been in the past. So yeah, that's really interesting. That's really interesting.
Why do you think many people who do have and want kids like work so hard to talk their friends and family members who don't into joining them? Like, it seems strange to me that is it just a factor of people not being able to imagine any other choice being a happy one for them?
Well, you know, I've thought about this a lot, and I think there is, as I said before, I think raising kids is really hard. It's really tiring. It's overwhelming. It becomes your life. It's fascinating. It's everything. So there is an inclination to invite people in to the club. Some would say cult. One of our writers calls it a cult. But, you know, I also think that it's just human nature to give advice based on what we have done ourselves. So whether it's telling your friend to buy a house because you have bought a house, or telling somebody to take this particular shortcut to work because you have done it and it's worked. I think that there is just something very, very sort of primal about that, no matter what it is. So if it's something as huge as having a child, I think that instinct, it just gets magnified. And so I think that part of it is just coming from that. As well as people, you know, wanting to have, you know, friends at the playground and at the club and people wanting to feel connected, because obviously if somebody has a family and someone doesn't, they're going to be, you know, there's going to be some disconnect there, no matter how close the friendship is.
My guest is author Megan Dom. She is editor of a new collection of essays called Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 Writers on the Decision Not to Have Kids. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, we have phone lines open at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the new SMU Doctor of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening doctoral program for Dallas community leaders and professionals. Now accepting applications for fall. More at smu.edu/DLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Megan Dom, who's an opinion columnist for the Los Angeles Times and editor of the new book Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 Writers on the Decision Not to Have Kids. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. Megan, for a book of essays, it makes sense to find people who are professional writers who are good at expressing themselves. I wonder, though, if you think there might be something unique about those who are in really creative professions that might be able to derive some of the same kinds of satisfaction from their work that other people find in raising a family.
Yeah, that was something I thought about a lot. And there was a period in the sort of in this when we were first kind of conceiving of this book, where there was some discussion of maybe talking to people in all sorts of situations, doing a more of a Studs Terkel kind of approach, mm-hmm. where I would interview you know, people from all walks of life and in all kinds of different professions who've, you know, people who've made this choice and talk to them about it. And I think that would be a really interesting project for somebody. But ultimately, I wanted to work with writers because writers are the ones who write, who you know, interpret the world in as imaginative and thoughtful and honest a way as possible and as interesting a way as possible. And I also, you know, it occurred to me that, yes, there is some perception that writers or creative people are sort of not like the rest of us. and I would, I guess I have to put myself in this category. So we're not like the rest of you or you know, the rest of the world. But you know, the fact is that most writers and creative people do have children and they want them. And so I don't think that making this choice has as much to do with being able to find fulfillment through our life's work as people may think. It's certainly a factor. I get extraordinary satisfaction out of my work. But I also think that if I was not a creative person, if I was a dolphin trainer or an accountant or whatever it was, I would still feel this way. It has to do with the way I'm wired. And I think that most of the writers in this book, if they were not writers, they would probably still have made this decision. They do, some of them do talk about this decision vis-a-vis their work, but I think ultimately it's more has to do with who they are as individuals than what they do.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Mary on the line in Dallas. Hey, Mary.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. The question I had for the guest was if she ever wondered or if any of the other writers wondered if they would regret this decision when it's too late to have kids. Or
what do you think about that?
Well, you never know what you're going to regret, you know. I think we can regret all sorts of things. And I think this idea that it's possible to go through life without having regrets, I mean, that is impossible. If you're an honest person, you're going to regret all sorts of things. But you know, ultimately, I had to say, well, I'm not going to make a decision based on fear of regretting it in the future. I kind of just have to trust myself enough now. And I have to say that in talking to older people who purposely did not have children, people in their 60s, 70s, even 80s, many, if not most of them say, I don't regret this. I don't regret this at all. You know, ultimately, we're all going to die alone in some way or another. Having kids does not protect you from dying alone. You know, there's often you get into this, who's going to take care of me when I'm old? That's going to be a question that you face no matter how many kids you have, you know, including if you have zero. Mm-hmm. So I would just try to think of it in those terms.
I wonder if some of the divisions will fall away after your contemporaries who right now are in the thick of raising kids have sent them away and, you know, are living independently again, or if there still will be that sort of difference in terms of the focus and the identity that they have for themselves.
I mean, I think that the focus changes. You know, like we were talking about before, we're in a culture where parenting has just been elevated to this not only full-time job, but just lifestyle that is, you know, all things to all people who are engaged in it. So I think that, you know, that obviously when you are not raising young children, you know, when your children grow up, your life is going to be different and freed up in certain ways. But, you know, the fact is that people get older and then they have grandchildren and then they're going to be interested in that and talk about that. So, yeah, I mean, I am not going to be somebody, you know, in my 60s and 70s who's going to be able to talk about my grandchildren. But I don't really anticipate that that's going to bother me, just as it doesn't bother me now that I don't have any kids to talk about.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Tony on the line in Fort Worth. Hi, Tony.
Hi there, Chris. I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say to your guest that I think what she's doing and the book, I want to see it. I have a lot of respect for her and people and her writers who feel the same way she does. I come from a Catholic family, a family of four. My parents had all of us, bing, 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 you know. And I had two kids as well. They're grown, gone. But I find that I have a lot of respect. My brother didn't have kids, and I've got friends that chose, like your guest, that not to have children, and they don't regret it either. So I just wish more people out in the world who have had kids were more respectful towards those that chose not to. And also, there are a lot of parents out there that shouldn't be. So that's all I was going to say.
Thanks so much for your call, Tony. Megan, is there anything there you want to respond to?
Yeah, I appreciate that comment, and I love hearing that kind of thing. It's funny, when I started talking to people about this book a couple of years ago when I started working on it, they would say, oh, well, you know, that's a very niche audience. This is a very limited group of people you're addressing. And I kept saying, no, this is a book for everybody. This is a conversation for everybody. This is a topic that has as much to do with parents as it does with non-parents, because it's about how to make positive choices in your life and how to have communities that are best for kids and for families and for everyone. And I really have been so pleasantly surprised to hear from people saying thank you for talking about this. And this is not an indictment of parenting at all. In fact, making this choice and particularly talking about it in this way is a tribute to parenting, because what we're saying, what I'm saying, and what these writers are saying is this is a really hard job, and it should not be undertaken by people who don't want to do it. It's paying respect. And that is really the what I would like to see people kind of thinking about and talking about more. So I appreciate what this caller had to say.
Did you have to come to a place where you knew exactly what you wanted to say when people said to you, so Megan, do you have kids?
I always just say, I say no, or they say, how many kids do you have? And I say zero. I have never been, obviously, like, I love this topic and I'm fascinated by it. And, you know, I'm a columnist and I'm an essayist, and I'm somebody who's always kind of, you know, looked at the world and written about my own place in it and sort of thought about these issues a lot. So I'm sort of just inclined to give an honest answer. But yeah, I mean, I know people who will even say things like, well, I couldn't have kids. It always makes me a little bit sad when someone who's chosen not to have children and is happy with that feels the need to shut down the line of questioning by finally saying, well, you know, it was tragic and I just couldn't have kids. That I'd like to get to a place where it's not so, where you don't have to resort to that.
That's not the only acceptable answer. Yeah.
No, it wasn't for me. It wasn't for me.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Adriana on the line in Dallas. Hey, Adriana.
Hi. So my question, and I would love to read this book because it's very, very interesting, that I think women don't feel comfortable talking about not wanting to have kids. I know that was my case. But I did end up having two, and now I feel a lot of questions come my way of, well, when are you going to have more? And why aren't you having more? So I was wondering if you encountered that with anybody that you interviewed with, or anyone that gave you an essay.
Well, I certainly hear from people who have one child who get flack for only having one child. So that's something that goes on. I think you can't win. I think it kind of comes back to this. People want you to do what they did. So if someone has four kids and you only have two or three, they're going to say, hey, why don't you have four? And I, you know, at a certain point, you've just got to say, I can only do what I can do. And I'm only going to do what's right for me. And that should be enough.
But it's funny because you're not allowed to tell a pregnant friend, like, don't do it. You know?
No. I mean, people should. This is not a manifesto. I really want to make that clear. There are always going to be more people who want children than don't, and it should be that way. What I want to do is just get past all these kind of flippant remarks. And I noticed that people who choose not to have kids are often guilty of kind of just making a joke or a punchline, you know, well, my kids, you know, my child has four legs and drinks out of a bowl on the floor, you know, like the fur babies. And I mean, you know, that's cute and that can be funny and there's a place for that. But I ultimately just think it's reductive and it's avoidant of the truth, which is so much more. So it's just so important to say, well, this just isn't something I wanted to do. It's not a joke. This is not about having more disposable income. I really never met anybody who really wanted a kid and really wanted a Porsche and went ahead and chose the Porsche. I'd like to meet that person. Actually, no, I would not like to meet that person. I never want to meet that person. But that's something we hear all the time, and it's just it drives me berserk.
Let's go. We have time for one more quick call. We have Malin on the line in Dallas. Hi, Malin.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead, please.
Oh, I just wanted to add my appreciation for this topic. I'm 55 years old. I do not have children. It was sort of a choice when I was younger. I used to say I didn't want children, and when I was a young person in my teens, people would always say, "Oh no, you don't mean that. You will have children. Don't say that." And as I got older, my first husband and I did not. We divorced, and I met my second husband, and we married about age 40 and decided that was not something we wanted to do at that point. And we're fine with that. We have nieces and nephews and a full life, and, you know, it's okay. But it is interesting that people do tend to want to. I went through a period of my 30s where it seemed like everybody constantly said, "Oh, you'll have them. Don't worry. Don't be sad." And I never was sad. And so it's nice that somebody has given a voice to this, and I appreciate that.
Thanks so much for your call. Sounds like a lot that you could probably relate to there, Megan.
Yeah, and I would add that I think it's really important for children to have adults in their lives who are not their parents or somebody else's parents. It's great when a kid can see that there are a lot of ways to be a responsible, caring adult in this world. And so many of the contributors, and myself included, work with kids. You know, we teach, we mentor. So many of the writers talk about their nieces and nephews. I mean, this is not like, you know, living in some kind of vacuum. There are so many ways to contribute to the lives of children without being their parents.
Do you think women in particular have an obligation to one another to stop? You know, first there's the mommy wars, but at least the mommy wars get solved when the mommies turn against the mommies, the women who don't choose to be mommies. You know what I mean? Like, can we just leave each other alone and let each other make our own decisions?
Well, we could do that, but then, of course, there would be no content on all these websites,
right,
that just traffic and headlines that are meant to generate clicks and, you know, dyspeptic comments and nothing else. I mean, it's really become an industry. And I think, you know, I'm just as guilty as anyone of clicking on some headline that is, you know, purposely there to outrage me instead of something more substantial. So, you know, it's become a form of entertainment.
So was there anybody that you spoke to for the book that said, I would like to talk to you, but I'm just not sure that the whole world knows that I've made this decision? Or was everybody pretty public before they came out with these essays?
Oh, no, they weren't public, but I don't think they were purposely not public. Mm-hmm. It was just that it really hadn't come up in a public way, or a lot of them hadn't really thought about it. You know, what was nice about this is that a number of the writers said to me, you know, this was actually a great opportunity to think this through. And I didn't have a lot to say about it. I didn't think I had a lot to say about it. But actually, in sitting down and trying to work on the essay, I got in touch with how I feel about this. And it was, you know, interesting and even cathartic for them.
Megan Daum edited the new book of essays, Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 Writers on the Decision Not to Have Kids. Megan, it's been a great conversation. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you, Chris. It was a real pleasure.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.